WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The phrase catch-22 has come to mean an absurd regulation or condition that leaves you trapped. The expression was coined by Joseph Heller in his 1961 dark comic World War II novel, Catch-22, about the absurdity of war. Joseph Heller died of a heart attack Sunday night. He was 76. As novelist E.L. Doctorow said to the Associated Press yesterday, when Catch-22 came out, people were saying, well, World War II wasn't like this. But when we got tangled up in Vietnam, it became a sort of text for the consciousness of that time. Heller's other novels include Something Happened and Good as Gold. He also wrote two memoirs and several plays. In 1981, he was struck with Guillain-Barré syndrome, a virus which attacks the nervous system and paralyzes the body. He recovered from the paralysis, although some of his muscles never regained full strength. I spoke with Heller in 1988 and asked how he came up with the expression catch-22.
I don't know where it comes from. I did not begin with that. In writing the first chapter, which was about 8 or 10 pages, I saw an opportunity to put in something, a catch. It comes from the phrase, there's always a catch to something, or there's just one catch. I decided on impulse to give it a number, so it would have the power of an official statute. I didn't know whether I would keep it or not keep it. Then in contemplating the second chapter and future chapters, I saw other occasions when that could be employed and to become a kind of mysterious philosophy, perhaps explaining events, but if not explaining anything, justifying any type of illegitimate action and converting it to legitimate actions. The number itself was of no significance to me, and for the 7 years I worked on it, it was called Catch 18. And then because Leon Uris was going to publish a novel called Mila 18, and Leon Uris was very famous and I was not, the publishers decided I'd better get a new title. And it was an editor who called me up one day and suggested, I think I have a number that's better than 18. He said 22, and I said, you're right. And it's better because it does reflect the repetitious or the repetition of dire events which occur throughout the book.
Why did you make it the catch that you did? In other words, the catch being that in order to get out of...
Well, that's just one use of Catch-22. Yeah. The one that's most frequently quoted is that a bombardier doesn't have to, a man doesn't have to go into combat if he's crazy, but as soon as he expresses a wish to get out of combat, that's proof of insanity. That's just one. To me, the more frightening one occurs toward the end, when MPs have come in and broken up a house and arrested people, and an old woman is left, and when you're Sally and ask them, how did they do it? Why were they allowed to do it? She says, Catch-22. And he said, did they read it to you? He says, no, they don't have to read it to me. And, of course, Catch-22 says they don't have to tell you what Catch-22 is about. And then comes the more dire line that says, Catch-22 says they can do anything to us we can't stop them from doing.
The absurdity of war was an idea really more associated with the Vietnam War than it was with World War II, the war that you were in and the war that Catch-22 is set in. Did you experience it as an absurd war when you were fighting?
No, in talking to students, I have to make a point of stating that Catch-22 was not autobiographical in the sense that the experiences, emotions, and attitudes of Yosari and other sympathetic characters were not my own at the time I was in World War II, and probably were not those of most people in World War II, because there was a uniformity of opinion, a sense of rightness and necessity about fighting World War II, which has not existed since and which has rarely existed in the past in American history. My impression, I was very young, as most Americans were in World War II, 19 or 20. So my impression might be misleading, but there was a sense of governmental efficiency. It might have been inefficient, but it was never silly and never as inhumanly corrupt or devious as the wars or the politics, political statements about the wars have been ever since.
You were a bomber pilot.
I was a bombardier, not a pilot.
Oh, okay.
A bombardier in the B-25s, which were medium bombers. I was overseas at a time when it was very safe, relatively safe for me. When I left, it became dangerous again, and before I got there, it had been dangerous. But I was a bombardier in the B-25.
Did your attitude toward being a bombardier and toward being in the military change as you got deeper into the war?
No, it changed in terms of my own personal experience. I was required to fly 60 missions, and most were relatively easy. In fact, if I went on what was called the milk run at the beginning, I was disappointed. The only thing I knew about war was an impression obtained from Hollywood motion pictures. And if nothing happened, I was disappointed. I wanted adventure. Late in my tour of duty on my 37th mission, I had some adventure. I saw a plane shot down and a man on my plane was wounded. And for the next 27 missions, I was in a state of consternation, which often approached terror.
So
But that did not involve questioning the necessity of that war or fighting that war.
You know, it's interesting to me. A lot of writers write a great war novel during their career. And something about war is that fighting in it gives you kind of great material if you're a writer. On the other hand, half of your generation is experiencing it at the same time. So you have all these other writers writing great novels about war. Was that ever a problem for you, knowing that you might have this great novel about war in you?
No, I didn't. It was not a problem. If anything, the very good. I hesitate to use the word great about any novel, including my own. But the very good and successful war novels were an inspiration for me and a deterrent. Now, we're thinking...
A deterrent?
Well, a deterrent in this way, that Norman Mailer had written The Naked and the Dead almost 10 years before I began Catch-22, and James Jones in 1950 or 51 published the From Here to Eternity. Deterrent in this respect, that I was not going to write a realistic book about World War II because my own experiences were limited. I really don't like doing research. And they, each of them, and others... had already done very well what they had done. There was no need for another novel that would duplicate those. So it was a guide to me, and I was seeking a... once I decided to write a novel, I didn't decide to write a novel until I was 30 years old, then the task came of what novel to write. And my major experience then was in World War II, so it would be set in World War II. But the fact that these other writers had done their work so well led me to seek an area in which a novel could be written that had not been, a kind of novel that had not been written, and that was Catch-22, which was inspired more by the post-World War, the attitudes of the post-World War, than by the actual situation of World War II or my own experiences in it.
You grew up in Coney Island,
yes,
which is most famous for its huge... amusement park, which is kind of past its glory days now. I assume it's still open. I haven't been back
there. Oh, it's open. But see, what most of the world doesn't know, it's also a very large residential area and has been. I was a mile away from the amusement area, but there was a very large, I don't know what the population figures were, but there was a very large residential Italian population in one part, and the other part was almost entirely Jewish. I mean, there must have been 25,000 or 40,000 or 50,000 families living there and regarded as a neighborhood, which had the advantages. Now, it was a low-income neighborhood then, but which had these very precious advantages of a beach, a boardwalk close by, which is most valuable in the spring and autumn and sometimes in the winter, and had this fantastic amusement park there.
Did you have this feeling that, well, most kids have the parachute jump within walking distance?
The parachute jump came late in my experience. Native Coney Islanders always looked on that with disdain as being there mainly for tourists.
It was
not a particularly exciting ride. I grew up at a time when there were large amusement parks. Luna Park was one and Steeplechase was another. But they were there. But the rites of passage involved growing up, the time you went on the highest roller coaster, which was called the Mile Sky Chaser, and then you went on the most thrilling, which was the Cyclone. And after a while, you're swimming out a quarter of a mile or half a mile to the bellboy there. That's the way we grew up. In certain rides, we began disdaining it in early years. Just the way we, if you wanted a hot dog, you went to Nathan's. You didn't go to Feldman's because Feldman's was German, and it didn't have garlic in it. It wasn't smoked.
The one book of nonfiction that you've written that I know of is No Laughing Matter, which is a very personal account of the period that you had Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is something that was responsible for a rather long period of temporary paralysis. Would you just describe a little bit what Guillain-Barré is?
Well, Guillain-Barré is a disease of what's called the peripheral nervous system, which I now know constitutes those nerves which come out of the spinal cord and out of the brain. The tissues are inflamed. As they get inflamed, the nerve responses are diffused, and the muscles become weak. The muscles become weak because they're not being activated. And it leads, in its most extreme cases, to total paralysis, where the person cannot even close the eyelids, and is incapable of talking, and is on a respirator. Mine was a moderate case. There is no known cause for it, although it's often stimulated by a viral infection, although the virus doesn't cause it, which means it often follows inoculations. I did not have inoculations. It was kind of amusing in onset because I did not have any sensory disturbances. Many people get numbness and tingling and then burning sensations. I was paralyzed and needed care for about, I was in the hospital, two hospitals for close to 6 months, and then it was about another 6 months before I could take care of myself. I left the hospital in the wheelchair and needed my friend Speed Vogel to take care of me, and I hired the most charming of the private nurses I have to take care of me, and we're married now because that worked out beautifully for us. It's a very serious disease, a very expensive disease, and many people do not recover to the extent that I have. And because I was knew I was recovering, and because I was never in pain, and the idea came, I wanted to keep Speed Vogel with me through that winter. And a friend of his suggested, why doesn't he write a book about taking care of me? And he asked me, could he do it? And I said, no, but I think together we can do it. So we wrote alternate chapters of it.
You know, you describe lying in bed in the hospital and having your friends coming to visit you. One of those friends was Mel Brooks.
Right.
And he basically wanted to know,
well, the first
is it contagious, or would he get it?
Well, Mel is, I've known Mel a long time. Mel is acutely, he's not a hypochondriac either, but he is acutely alert to the possibilities of diseases of all kinds and does really have medical dictionaries and I believe in truth does subscribe to the New England Journal of Medicine and to Lancet, which is the English publication. So his first visit to me, really, he knew more about it than I did then. But I knew enough to know he knew a great deal about it.
Were you offended with him coming in and basically wanting to quiz you to see?
Not at all. Not at all. He was also coming to
I realize that. I realize that.
He's coming as a friend.
Okay. I hope this isn't too personal, so if it is, we'll drop it. But I know you married the woman who was your nurse.
Yeah.
Did you have to redefine your relationship after you got well and it was no longer
not
a professional relationship?
I had been married a very long time to my first wife. We had been separated for years. First time in my life I lived alone was resolved. I would never marry again because of my... I didn't want to take the trouble learning how to live with somebody. Now, what happened, fortunately for me and Valerie, is that we were together day and night for close to a year. So by that time, the nurse-patient relationship changed very, very gradually, and I knew her very well, and she knew me intimately as a result of taking care of me. No, it didn't change at all.
One of the things you're famous for is your sense of humor in your writing. Do you feel that having had a protracted illness has affected your sense of humor at all?
Not in the least, no.
Do you think it's heightened it?
No, it doesn't affect my humor. It's given me a much healthier attitude toward life. Uh, it, it takes a lot more to get me angry or to make me impatient than it did before. And I'm leading a glorious life now because God knows was finished. Now, I ran out of money while I was sick. It's a very, very expensive illness because it requires a long period of care in a rehabilitation hospital. But when, luckily, my hands came back first, I was able to resume writing. And when God Knows was completed and the publisher liked it, accepted for publication, from that time on, I'm living a more relaxed, happier life than ever. I do only what I want to do in a way of work, which is to write.
Yeah, have you changed the balance of work to leisure in your life?
No, my leisure is my work.
Uh-huh.
I'm fortunate that I have no interest in athletics and watching it or playing it. I'm bored stiff, as bored by the Olympic Games as I am by the presidential campaigning. What my pleasure is writing, and so in that respect, I'm extremely fortunate.
Joseph Heller, recorded in 1988. He died Sunday of a heart attack. He was 76. This is Fresh Air.